the way our learners get quality education in environment that is dedicate for them. Can I then hand over to you then to do that on the
introduction? Presentation of school day designers and being a
thank you, Dean Chairperson. It's quite a lengthy presentation, so I'll try and speak to the slides that I don't get to start. The overview, in terms of the background, as she has mentioned, violence is quite common in the country. Safety and non-violence, as you know, is absolutely critical as requirements for the achievement of the exceptional outcomes that we get on town. That learners learn best when they learn things and when they attend school in safe conditions and they feel comfortable. While levels may be high, this is not an immediate South African problem. School violence is common throughout the world and it warranted various conditions of inquiry internationally. The good thing about that is that it has given us and South African evidence base from which we can work. So, we're very clear from the international experience on what actually doesn't work in some cases. And so regular or prolonged training of traditional schools has proven not to work. The presence of armed security guards in schools also do not work. Zero tolerance approaches to drugs, alcohol, and violence, where learners are found in possession of any of these, they are excluded or expelled, in the long term also do not work. Metal detectors or infrastructural improvements like sensors, if they are used alone, also not enough. And we've seen instances where the department has raised the sensors in a couple of weeks or a couple of months, those sensors will be gone. Investing in after-school programs are only for facilities, extramural activities, and standalone is also not enough. So what are effective strategies to address school violence? It's important to have manageable thought lines. It's important to train your teachers and so that teachers are able to identify learners that are at risk. Violence in schools is rarely impacted. There's normally be surface to violence and teachers are properly trained to be able to identify it. If you are to address school violence, it's important to build relationships with the community within these that school is located. With the parents of the school, with the learners of the school, and with the broader community. It's important to have access to school counselors, social workers, which is an important aspect of the school support is to provide psychosocial support and practical being. It's not really doing well in this particular area, but maybe it's a discussion for another time. And it's important to have comfortable school management, and I'll demonstrate this point a little bit later for the South African context, that you must have accountable teachers and school management if you are to address safety issues in the school. Educators must be in class, it's been formal, etc. That I'll provide a little bit later. They must be managing their class, that's overseeing their learners, and they must be comfortable for what happens. It's also important if you look at what works that you've got to work with the learners at the school. Learners must be given a voice. They must be part of the solution. It's important as a parent to involve the local community, but within very defined roles and responsibilities. What we find is that if you control the community and the roles aren't well defined, before you know it, some local leader in the community is managing your school. And so it's important that the roles are respected and defined. It's important to build transparency and trust. Schools that are unsafe and that have high levels of violence also have high level of distrust amongst staff, amongst learners and staff, amongst the community and the school. And it's important to build a human rights culture at the school where everybody feels welcome. There's substantial evidence from the international experience to show that when you utilize these evidence-based approaches, you can actually turn the situation in unsafe in the world. Now let's look at the as the data for South Africa on coronavirus. What was the center for justice and crime prevention expressed in Exxon? And we conducted two national surveys, the first one in 2008 and the second one in 2012. And what those two have shown is that the levels of violence in South African schools have more or less stabilized around 20%. If you look at the circle at the bottom, it indicates that first of all learners that have been surveyed reported their power participation has been threatened with violence by someone in school, 6.3% have been assaulted, 4.7% sexually assaulted or raped, and 4.5% have been robbed. 20% of our learners have experienced cyberbullying, and violence in school is often not a one-shot. It's often a repetitive process. Violence is also not limited to incidents only between learners. Important point that in one of the evidence, the classroom is the primary site of violence. And it often happens when the teacher is in prison, emphasizing the point I made earlier around the teacher being present. Educators will also often be victims of violence at school, 52% of verbal abuse, physical violence 12%, and sexual violence 2.3%. And there are some interesting new work that's been done by a couple of the Forensic Council in this area. So like the 2008 study, the 2012 survey highlighted the extent to which family and community factors intersect with levels of violence in the school. If you have high level of violence in the local community, the chances are that you have high level of violence in the school. Communities with high levels of crime and violence experience higher levels of crime and violence in the school. To emphasize the point about the location of violence, if you look at the first row, which is the classroom one that is the highest up, the bulk of the violence identified happens in the classroom. There's very little violence that happens at the school gate area, which is where schools intersect with the community. Playing field is another area of violence. In the corridors, less so in school policies, and a bit more in other open grounds. The issue about supervision and presence of teachers obviously plays a big role in terms of school violence. It's also important to note that there's a perpetrator of violence in school use. And so, school teachers. The bulk of the violence perpetrators in schools perpetrated by the learners. And that's quite an important point that goes back to the management of schools. In terms of breakdown of the provinces where violence in schools are quite high, and the provinces that have consistently high levels of violence in their schools are the Western Sector of Boko and East. And across those two surveys, 2008 and 2012, those three problems continue to stand up. The Western Sector, we have concerned about because we had high levels of violence, but we also have seen a surge over the last year in the bit of gang-related activities in the Western Sector community, and so that is no matter our case. We are working with the South African Police Services to end the Western Cape Party to develop an end-to-end strategy that we implement in schools in Western Cape. It's important to make the last point, which is the school resource officers that are present in some of the schools in the Western Cape. Whilst they were initially associated with low levels of PM crime and increased perception of learning safety, after about 12 years of having officers in school, they've shown to increase resistance and antisocial behavior among learners and eroded significant for your under relationship. Again, be consistent with international experience. So, what is the DE's response? And can I say, first, just before I continue to make this point, that we have high levels of violence in our community. And I cannot see that we have any short-term solutions to this particular problem. So we need this one for the long run. And we all need to work together in regards to this. The school violence is undergirded by a myriad of individuals, schools, families, broader communities, or risk factors that coalesce to create vulnerability for violence in our schools. Any attempt to curb violence occurring in schools needs to extend beyond the school itself. And that's where I think as a department we really need to work closer to our team in terms of how we work that out. Parental community support, including prevention and early intervention, are the most reliable and cost-effective ways to support students. So that's the model that we use, is to understand that the individual, the perpetrator of violence or the victim of violence located within the relationship of the school, or the community and the society as well. In 2006, the department initiated working with UNICEF, the Creative Space Against Sharpening Schools program. In 2008, a survey revealed that most schools had similar safety and security challenges, which were proved as follows: issues around physical infrastructure and equipment. In some schools, of course, we have learner safety, dangerous weapons on the school property. It may be necessary to use a gap network to get into the school. These reporters have pictures around perpetrators from coming onto the school property. It's a point I wanted to make in an earlier slide, but I don't want to go back to it now, but just to refer you to it. If you look at who perpetrates violence acts in schools, if you look at the road for outsiders, 0.0%. There's very few of our violent incidents. There are a few, but very few that are actually perpetrated by people coming onto the school property. It's mostly in the school itself. Safety, security, management and governance, which I highlighted to you as a key component of our strategy, and then partnerships with the local community. The department, working with PJCC again, has developed an early warning system. They guide management teams for principals, school management teams, school governing bodies, and these are being rolled out to schools as we speak. Before this, to note that the DBE is all assigned a protocol with Parenthetic Police Services, and I'll speak a little bit about that later on. And the strategic objective of this protocol falls under the Ken Forster Teaching and Learning Program. Now, the Teaching and Learning Program is a whole school intervention program that we do forensic analysis together with 10 other study countries. It's a study initiative, and at some point, because it includes safety but broader than safety, at some point you'll see it come back and then share that with the program with the community as well. Our National School Safety Framework. Earlier this year, the Council of Education Minister approved the National School Safety Framework. We're currently rolling out this particular framework that provides minimum standards for safety at school, provides safety commitments to be established at schools, and give guidance to schools about how to develop their school safety plan. We're currently training throughout the country, and we've built a monitoring and evaluation system on our South African monitoring and enforcement framework. We have had a protocol with the South African Police Services for the last 5 or 6 years. We have in that process been able to link 16,400 schools to police stations. It's important to note in that context that we link primarily those schools that have experiences of violence and safety issues police officers, and we currently talking to the police about how we strengthen that protocol and partnership. So that we ensure that schools know exactly who it is that they are speaking for, and that we know that when the principal of a school has a particular incident and calls the police, that they need a response immediately. But what we want to do, Chairperson, is focus that protocol even more. So we know, for example, we have one, two instances in Hafeng in particular where the police work very closely with schools to combat in particular alcohol, illegal substances, and also in that school. So what you do is you get a full principal to work with a local mission commander, and between the two of them, they will agree on when those raids will be conducted. You know, the police will go in and they will see, and if you do that a number of times, you can actually turn a situation in terms of bringing those people to want to school around. It's all important in this context that we're now talking to the police about, and we've had a number of complaints from communities about the location of surveillance cameras or police outfits in the proximity of the school. Now, under the law, these can't be located within 500 meters of the school, but we do find instances, Chairperson, where the local communities do grant those permits. And so what we want to do is to work with the local communities, with the local government, but also with the police to ensure that we close those down. I'll keep this code of conduct slide and then talk about bullying. So we've done a manual for schools on cyberbullying. We've had fantastic support from the ICT community. We've had great relationships with Microsoft for Africa, but also with Intel. We've developed a booklet that we can have circulated to all schools. We're updating that booklet at the moment so that we know technology evolved completely. We just looked at about 5 years ago, and we're updating it at the moment to exactly what found in a new social platform that emerged. We also have a systemic program, an institutional systemic program to address bullying in schools, and part of that, we have 23,743 provincial master trainers, and we have gone out to train the teachers at 12,754 schools. We are currently working with a range of our social partners to develop a behavior change communication campaign so that we can put out the key messages around bullying. Some of the things that are emerging at the moment is that school management teams, principals, teachers do not regard bullying as a problem in school. It's often seen as this is the kind of thing that we've all gone through, and then a problem will be solved and they'll grow up. So as part of this campaign, we want to drive key messages around saying this is the kind of intervention that as schools do have to do, but also that bullying is more violent and shouldn't be tolerated in the schools. We've also done, as part of that, a manual on homophobic bullying, which is also quite a common form of discrimination and bullying in the schools. The National Strategy on Prevention and Management of Alcohol and Drug Use. The strategy that we developed last year was approved by the Health Sector Minister in the process of making those booklets available for schools and available on our website as well. For this instance, again, it's a collaboration with the Department of Social Development, but also we're working very closely with the Department of Health. The last bit on that slide is also quite important. Chairperson, we are in the process of signing an MOU with the South African Institute for Drug Free Sport, because we know that, especially where students are participating in sports leagues and on, they take one to advance performance, and we know that from some of our data schools, it is quite a common problem, but a problem that we need to address as a matter of urgency. In terms of safety, we have regulations for safety measures for public schools that were passed in 2001. We, together with our legal services at the moment, begin to look at how we need to update those. There's a number of issues, for example, here that we want to look at. Of course, this is the initiation of this process. But what we wanted to build into the new regulations is that it's mandatory for schools to implement the national school safety framework, that schools be compelled to do a safety risk assessment twice a year. And these would be simple things like the teacher checking whether your electrical sockets are all sealed, that you understand that if you have a swimming pool, you need to have a cover for the pool. You know, those other kinds of safety issues that aren't necessarily associated with violence. That every school has an emergency plan and a disaster management plan. That there must be supervision of learners throughout the school, then even after school, especially when students go out on excursion. And then important, that last one, that if you know of pesticides and has a substance that is at school, that it should be locked away, kept safe, or not used at all to control the risk to school learning. So in terms of the regulations for school safety, what we want to do is to look at all those other issues that make schools unsafe for children that are not necessarily related to violence. Then, Chairperson, another issue of safety that confronts our schools is the one of roses. We've got 60-70% of all our children that are at the walk. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. However, we need to ensure that they're safe if they don't walk. We know that from statistics, that poorer people, if you're poor, you bear the brunt, a disproportionate burden of avoidable morbidity and mortality for road traffic incidents. South Africa is a leading cause of death for children under the age of 14 at the moment, is pedestrian death. And so what we want to do is work very closely with the Department of Transport and RTMC to address these issues. We also have a partnership with Imperial Holdings, through their partner, Education Center, and together with them, we have in areas where we know research is a particular problem, we have 550 scholar patrols in that field. So, Chairperson, in conclusion, and my apologies for rushing through this, but in conclusion, school safety and violence in our schools are problems that are long-term problems. We need to have long-term solutions for them. We need to work very closely with our local communities to build the necessary partnership to ensure that we can have learners learn in conditions in the future. Thank you.
What our gathering is, we need to ensure both this presentation and charities at the same time. Because now again, the issues that are raised on the issue of school safety, they touch on the things that are expecting also from the presentation and charities. Involve the whole issue of community. You know, and you know that we are expecting them to be checking on that issue. We understand that schools are the foundations of our community, so how can we bring along the community to take ownership of the schools, to have communities that are well behaved so that our learners can learn from it. So I think the things that have done for us to be able to connect the two and see how to make sure again that our schools are always safe for the children. Not undermining the safety and that we're faced with a huge challenge when it comes to the teachers' safety, but
with member department of secretary, all the strategy that we hope somehow, somewhere we are going to be change the benefits of the commission, leading the students to the police, and maybe in the near future we even need to know the impact of the protocols that have been done, where you have a clear picture maybe of an example of a school where you are hiding even violent and then but through the linkage of the staff with the schools, you're seeing the levels of violence going down, how we can learn that. At the same time, we don't want to see certain hearing of these protocols that practically are getting the truth that should be there from those protocols and what are the impacts of that. But thank you all so much. Honorable Member, that was the presentation of the initiative. Can I open up for the interaction and discussion when it comes to this presentation?
It's good to be here and include that in the presentation. After that, we to be accompanied to join. And when speaking about the managers of the site, I would like to know what is the current situation presently at the secondary school and primary perspective, so that we understand even one to manage the class part, what we need to do, what are we proposing to do. You just said that educators are also exposed to violence. Is it possible for you to deliver the type of violence that you have been using that you can use the interpretation as the initial where learners are being educated? How and to what extent that? Because we have noticed that in our study of the behavior or the discipline that is okay in class is taught by the teacher in a place of source of the learner. And you must have sure that children really walk to school in a place. How can we actually know that it can be a long term? If they are learners who walk more than 3 or 4, more than 2 kilometers to pick up where the taxi or where the transport needs for them, the children have to wake up early in the morning, 4 o'clock, to be able to go to the point and pick them up for family. To be able to be at a pick-up point, and these children are restricted in all the sorts of types of violence. How can we care that we make sure that even those families who have a problem to become their parents? What is this? And coming for that, school transport.
Thank you, Jason.
you have to look at them. I hope just to make a comment, I look at ultimately teacher aid and teachers who will be looked at in addition to similar houses, because, and particularly in difficult to teach areas, not again within areas, areas where there are high levels of low education. It's quite correct that these are intruders. I still can't quite believe that something like their intolerance doesn't work as a deterrent. It must. Can you just explain a little further what you're saying there? You're saying these do not work in isolation or that they do not work at all? The following slide is effective strategies to address school violence, and a lot of it is focused on educator training and educators identifying learners at risk, etc. And I understand that you've developed training. What does concern me is that I don't find anything on the TAFE's list of training that deals with this at all. And TAFE being responsible for continuous professional development of teachers. Certainly should be focusing, I would imagine, on what the department sees as a priority. I would like to think that school safety is a priority. Your comment on that would be most welcome. You mentioned that on page 4, you mentioned that violence in schools has stabilized at 80%. I would have liked a bit more horror in your voice, because it sounds a very high percentage. So 20% of kids have been exposed to some level of sexual assault or robbery or assault or threatening with violence. How does that compare internationally? And the same question then goes for the physical violence against teachers. 12.4% is a very high percentage of teachers that have experienced physical violence, not the threat of violence, physical violence. How does that compare internationally? I'd be really interested in what studies, and I don't expect what studies you're referring to. I certainly don't expect Dr. Whittle to check this into you. You have all the names and authors and whatever at your fingertips. But there's a lot of research that is referred to here, and it would be really good to get some indication of criticism. That would be wonderful. I mean, you say, for instance, that the visibility of school resource officers erodes educator-learner relationships, which that's a big stretch, you know, from having school resource officers on site to eroding educator-learner relationships. So it would be interesting to find out more about that. I just want to focus on this issue of community support, parental and community support. Not much more is said on it other than that it's necessary. Exactly how to engage the community is not addressed in this presentation. But it is indicated that the regular community support are the most reliable and cost-effective ways to support school safety. Now, in the Western Cape, approximately 40,000 new enrollments are experienced every year, mostly coming from the Eastern Cape. Similar number experienced in Gauteng. Those kids have not got parental support. There isn't parental support. I mean, this is, and I don't want to take too long on this, but it's a real problem. I visited a school in Claremont, which is also again run-written area in Durban. And this principal had been in place for 6 months and seen key sailing at his school. But he said 90% of these children are from the Eastern Cape, because parents are sending their kids from the Eastern Cape to what they perceive as much better education in KZN. There are people in that run-written area are opening their homes because they get paid by the parents from the Eastern Cape, who think that their children are now being well looked after, and they are not at all. The fact is that there isn't community support for many, many tens of thousands of our learners, and many tens of thousands of, there isn't community support for parental support. So it makes then the teacher's job that much more important. With respect to the training, have you extended your training to the higher education institutions so that student teachers are being trained on the identification of and dealing with vulnerable children? On page 12, regulations for safety measures at all public schools, you say specific attention is going to be given to every single one of the things that actually should be covered by the Occupational Health and Safety Act. And quite frankly, the Occupational Health and Safety Act requires more than twice a year inspection. I don't think that this is being implemented in the schools, despite the ministerial response to a query that it is. But, you know, it would have, if it were, if there were such assessments being done on a regular basis, you wouldn't have things like children falling into toilets. And I think that needs looking at again, because that is not legally compliant. What you say as your minimum is not a legal minimum, in fact. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Most of the issues have been covered, but I would like to start off with regard to violence against educators. We've just seen the article about the deputy principal being murdered at a school in Tata. I'm not saying it's a learner-educator case, but that is something that has to be looked in, the safety of our educators as well. You alluded to the fact that the grounds are not always properly protected, so they could be the reason behind this as well. And then if you go to page 5, your location of violence on slide 10 and the perpetrators, I'd like to know how many cases have been reported to SAP on this, if we could get the figures on that. And slide 19, if you have a look at the SASAN, last week we had a presentation on SASAN, and or on database management, and then they presented it to HEDCOM. It was said that they are facing challenges with regard to the implementation of SSS because they do not have enough staff, support staff. Now we're putting an extra burden on principals to do SSS and school, run with everything else in their school. And we have so many educators where they are their own rangers. How are we going to assist these educators? So they could have 100, 135 children in their school, and they're running a one-man show. We need assistance on that. And then with the closure of taverns, you cannot just involve SAPs. You'll have to involve the municipalities, because they, at the end of the day, if we go ahead to the piece of land that's being used. Slide 22, the e-safety guidelines. It's been made available, but have the provinces discussed this with the schools yet, or is it just a document lying with the provinces? And then if I can just go back to slide 18, I see a bit of contradiction there. The DE and SAP signed a protocol to reduce crime and violence in schools, but in slide 4 you say police security guards have not been seen to work. So it doesn't make sense to me. In one slide you say it doesn't work, and the next slide you say it does work. And then, you spoke about scholar transport, but not in any of these slides do I see you speaking about safety measures in boarding facilities. That is a huge issue. We have to have safety measures there, because we know support staff in boarding schools are lacking. Who is going to take the responsibility for that? somewhere I read something about the Shlateka school safety toolkit. How is that implemented in the school? And I think that is for now. In a second.
Thank you, Chairperson. Want to welcome the presentation, but to want to add on the issue of heavens. The distance of 500 meters away from Zing to me is very, very near, and it needs some kind of looking, and you also make specification, because one can argue that I've moved 500 meters counting from the gate right around the fence of the school, then the back of the school, then the cavern. And the person will say, I've complied, because it's 500 meters away from the gate of the school. So it needs some bit of a specification that time. Chairperson, I would like to see ourselves taking this one very serious as to how you reach out to the community, because locating the school, the issue of school safety to the school itself, it won't assist us to come up with an immediate solution. But if we can be able to reach out to the community, how do we involve the churches? How do we involve the community leaders within the community, that they reclaim their position so that they can be able to make a meaningful contribution towards the safety of our learners. Because if they can be able, these learners will be able to come out in a family environment which is rooted in values that are very strong, it is likely not for them to engage in criminal activities, or they will be able to blame each and everyone in the same situation. So I would like us to look at that, that we emphasize more on the community involvement, because the teachers themselves, they've got enough and they cannot win it all by themselves. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you very much. I also would like to appreciate the work of the media. I would give to Akifasi. On page 2, that title, approaches that so much well. This is the right way of putting it. Approaches that so much well. It says something that's about it. Can't we put another word? Because we must add on what is happening. No discipline or discipline measures can't apply. So we have to add something to make sure that all the things that have happened, these are the things that we can add, and then maybe then there's this issue of strategies to address food violence. I have now been on page 3, many have been articulated. I don't know whether it is possible to get even put the school infrastructure, not school, the school size, school infrastructure. It's sometimes it's what it is best for the responsible environment. The same. The concept of children, no one was very defensive. Defensive part of it sometimes has a challenge. When the school is very big, and small number of students, sometimes though, the violence or abuse may happen at the other side of the school. And last one, what comment can we do on the present way of discipline measures that are happening at the school to keep bullying, to keep what can you say on those problems? What added value can we do? Because we add so much is happening. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Before I say something that's of concern to me, I just want to add on what one of our colleagues has said, and that's the issue of safety of learners at hostel. Because we've just been on an oversight at special schools that we don't have health mothers and fathers anymore. And I don't know what happened to the precept system and how effective that is anymore, because I think we must, of course, a lot of these things happen on how we grow up and the time and knowledge our parents have and communities, etc. But I'd like to raise that. I would also like to raise the issue of when we talk, Doctor, about, prevention is better than care, cover the school, what, but that we also look at when teacher for a grade one child to not send him off to a toilet far away like a child that has fallen into the toilet some years ago in the Bobo, because most of our old schools, the toilets ain't closed. Toilets are far away in the corner of the schoolyard, and you cannot leave a small child or still grade one with a grade one to the toilet in the bush somewhere. And I think there's no monitoring of time when the child comes back. But I would also like to raise something that the South African Human Rights Commission, as well as there was a national intervention strategy by the Department of Justice, and it's all about our learners our lesbian, gay, bisexual children. And there was a study made by the Human Rights Commission that more and more attacks or violence against this group of learners are made. And where is the department that's got that covered in their policy? What are we doing about it? Because if you read that document of the Human Rights Commission, it's quite clear that we can't even allow that type of discrimination. Equal learning, education rights to all children, no matter of their sexual orientation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. So those are series of questions that you remember that. But again, I think there is only, there is also is with the portfolio signed in itself, where randomly they can check the land, there's something that is also behaving now in our schools. I'm not sure how to put it right. What do I call it under that IBC?
The vendors.
The vendors that you see in our school. Really, it's becoming an issue now. Okay. Where, for me, at a random checking, even on the products that they give to our and the drugs that is where that's the sort of these drugs in most of our schools. And, you know, I know we are still going to pose that question in the CLTC because those are part, those are members of the community. Mm-hmm. What is it that they are bringing to school? But we have seen, I was deceived, I think this week or last week, that boy in one of the actual program on TV, mm-hmm. they were saying we buy these muffins with Dara from these vendors. You know, it was not the only case, it's something that you see now and again. What is it that you can do? I'm mostly interested with the two provinces that you guys they are dealing with when it comes to school violence. Maybe according to your own research within the department that you might have made, what might be the cause of that? What are we learning from that, you know? Why is it so when it comes to that? And sometimes I know we can sit here, like we're talking about these, and I just highlighted the issue of the vendors, we're talking the issue of drugs, you know, the issue of traveling the kilometers from the school. And we are understanding as a committee that sometimes it's not upon your department to look at things, but you have to work with other departments. And unfortunately, we are education, we always question you and we are overseeing you, but maybe it would be good that you even share with us some of your frustrations as the department when it comes to this. And just imagine in the school where it has been reported that the cabin, they have not respected that 500 meters away. What are you doing as the Department of Education? You have to go to the licensing department, you know. Maybe those frustrations, because it will even help even the community out there to know that you see these things, but now, at the end, you'll be able to live if Department of Education is not taking care of our learners, not, you know, not respecting even the laws and regulations that are there. For me, I believe maybe there are frustrations, maybe, and challenges that you might be faced with in dealing with such. So that as a parliament, we even have, I know even cabinet will officially sit in this forum, but we even have our committees where we can have joint committees and make sure that we share this frustration for them to talk to their department and to say, Department of Education is complaining about this, can you do something they don't want to charge you? Again, I was very interested in the 10 countries, static countries that you are having, that joint committee sort of, as to say, if you can share with us today, which countries are those, what are the lessons that you are learning from those countries? Because it will open us up as to say, which countries like Nigeria and that, what are you saying about the issues of violence in school and, you know, what are good practices that you are learning from that? Thank you.
Thank you, Jessica. Thank you for your so one of a lot more. The zero tolerance to drugs you have approaches in some countries around the world. If the minute a child is caught with either a weapon, a dangerous weapon, or with drugs, they are summarily expelled. And that's really what we're talking about. So it's about how we provide support to learners as part of that initiative. But you're going to merely excel on the basis that you've been caught with dangerous weapon or drugs at school, simply done work. So it's really about having zero tolerance drive is part of a broader program of support for these schools. We will gladly share the references, you know, to the studies that we refer to. There's a paper that we've developed that we will share with you. The 20% violence schools hit high by international comparison. Generally, countries around the world that struggle with violence. There are a few countries that have higher rates of school violence, like Jamaica, for example. But the 20% for South Africa is high, and you're probably right, there should have been more harder in my voice on that one.
How high?
Compared to Jamaica, it's higher now, and there's a few other countries. But South Africa probably is around 20-30% higher than the rest of the world. And so it is quite high, even by international comparison. But may I add, we, for example, don't have the kind of gun violence that you see in some societies, like for example in the United States. So we don't have the number of deaths that you would report, for example, like a country, you know, like the United States, including teachers that would get murdered in their schools. So, you know, we also have that perspective. In our case, you know, we regarded a teacher being pushed by a child as violent on that teacher, which is probably right. But, you know, in the big scheme of things, it hasn't been a physical assault with a dangerous weapon. And so, I mean, I think one must certainly have perspective. Chairperson to be 10, I think maybe what we must do is move an international comparison and provide. To say, you know, in some countries that have high levels of violence, this is where I think the picture, you know, in terms of that list. And you know, if you get a couple of weeks, we can, you know, work with Dr. Wilson, we can certainly provide that. We will make available studies on the resource officers in Western Tech that has indicated that it erodes relationships between study done by CJPP, and we'll glad to make that available to you. We have started Honorable Lumbo discussion with the higher education institution. It is an area of work that concerns the Department of Basic Education, that there are very few higher education institutions at the moment that are training teachers in the value of our constitution, in our human rights framework, in the kind of strategies that are required to deal with young people. There's particular ways in which you interact with adolescents, for example. A very, very few higher education institutions actually do that. In fact, I come from a physical education seminar yesterday where we presented where increasingly universities are no longer training physical education. And so there's a lot of work, I think, that we need to do with the Department of Higher Education to ensure that these areas do get the priority attention that they require. Honorable Boss, I really don't know how many of these cases have been reported yet, so, you know, we can certainly come back to you on that one. Dr. Wilson will make a note on that. It's a survey that was done, I mean, as I said, 2008, 2012, and I'm not even sure if we would have captured that data, but, you know, we can certainly check. If they can, again, maybe we can eventually respond to some of the challenges there. Certainly from our side, you know, we add the item to the program, and we then rely on other, you know, colleagues to control that discussion. The closing of seven, I mean, as I've indicated, and it gives up to the question that the Honourable Chair has raised, some of the frustrations, you know, in this area. So there is, Honourable Cause, I'm not quite sure how the 500 metres, you know, are exactly determined from the school. But the frustration sometimes is that the local municipality would have granted the cabin a license. And sometimes the cabin is directly opposite the school gate. So, and those are some of the things that, you know, obviously we need to work with sound on. Often also what happens is that the tavern owners appeal to the Department of Trade and Industry, and on that basis their license, you know, conditions are rejected and they, you know, retain. So those are some of the frustrations I think sometimes that one has. And Chair is probably right,
in the broader discussion with these governments, with all the three of the governments, about how we, you know, how we address those. The contradiction that you see between SAP and our protocol with them, or, and I think the presentation says the prolonged presence, honourable member. So what we know is that there are instances where you obviously want to stabilize the situation. So if they have gang warfare on a school, you obviously need to send in the police, you know, arms, you know, they obviously need to secure the space. But what he's saying is that short-term measure is used for the very specific issues and they need to be withdrawn. What we do know, for example, is if you have the presence of weapons, dangerous weapons at school, and interact with your local community, your parents from the school or community members, and they safeguard the perimeter of the school, and sometimes even search learners as they come into the school, that combined with other initiatives, you know, then would be an effective mechanism. Boarding facilities is certainly something that I'm not sure if we have regulations on the next one, where you can stick with the boarding facility one. And so I think that is our previous process that can update it, and that's how the NSS. And I think to some extent, Honourable Porter, part of your comment was really a response to Honourable Lovemore, because it is about how schools reach out to their communities. And sometimes not just the parents, but, you know, members of the community within which that school is up. It could be, you know, faith-based organizations, you know, local organizations, political parties. It's really about the school working in partnership with this environment. And so part of what we do, for example, is to do a directory of health services for schools, where they know, you know, from what it is that we provide, who the support structures in the communities are. And it's about reaching out to those structures, working in partnership to address violence in schools. Honourable Nguni, well, I think you're right. It's probably wrong to say that these approaches don't work. They don't work in isolation. They probably work if you put them together as combinations. And it's really about finding combinations for schools that could work for them. And those they work out in partnership with their local community. The school infrastructure one is a very interesting one. And I'll give you an example of some of the work that we do with Thunderdome, for example, about making roads safer for learners, you know, on their way to school. So what we do on the, I always forget whether the N1 or the N2 comes on the airport. The N2. So what we do on the N2 is that they built that barrier in between the two lanes. And so what happens, because you've got, Thunderdome has got the CCTV cameras there. And then what happens, you can see how the pedestrians come to the side and they climb over the fence, even when you have the footbridge around. And so now what they've done is they put those barriers on top to prevent people. And then there's the one incident, the company comes with a big hammer and load them down, you knock them down so that you can cross. But the point is, that effectiveness of infrastructure is only as good as interventions that are built around it. So you're right, schools must attend to it. And you're absolutely right that, you know, we've got to provide the physical infrastructure to make it as safe as possible. But even if your physical infrastructure is there, even if your fence is there, if you don't actually supervise those hotspots, and if you don't have a teacher in a classroom, you know, it really doesn't help you that much. The special schools one, you know, we keep special schools as part of ordinary schools. And, you know, maybe it's a discussion that we must have with colleagues up in the national department about whether there are, you know, separate measures that would be required for them. I certainly take your point, Honourable Van der Waals, that, you know, in terms of boarding schools and special schools, it's a blind spot at the moment, you know, unless Dr. Wolfen can add to that. The prefect system has really been, I know that some schools still have prefect systems, but generally those have emerged into our RTL at the moment. Yeah. And, you know, see, what we're encouraging as part of other work that I do, you know, part of our health system, is to never
data teachers allow foundation-based learners to go to the point on their own. So what we encourage foundation-based changing teachers to do is to accompany their classes, you know, to classrooms, and if it isn't necessary to ensure that there's an adult that can, you know, if the child needs to go at a time when the rest of the class doesn't go, to find ways that an adult supervise that particular child. Then the issue about homophobic violence is, I mentioned this, it is a booklet that is specifically with homophobic violence. We currently working with the University of the Western Cape, where over the last, and we know that this kind of violence is also highly prevalent in Western Cape schools, and they recently introduced, I think last year, a course to both train in-service teachers, but also training teachers about how to deal with this kind of issue. But the issue of gender is a perennial problem, and it's very difficult for us to, you know, to police it effectively, I think, because part of what we want to do, and we're certainly encouraging schools to enter into relationships with a vendor at the school fence, to bring them onto the school property at particular times and to regulate what it is that they do. But part of that is really about how we work with local communities. We know that there's a significant number of children that report that the only place where they buy their drugs is at school. And so it's a serious concern. And it's an area that we're working very closely with the Capcom at the moment. But it's one of those things I think that we need to try and stick through a bit more from our side. Because at local level, you know, you have a friend, somebody comes to the fence themselves, pool drink or peanuts or whatever it is that they do. And as part of that you know, get these unscrupulous people that you come and start actually to children. And I think once we know where those schools are, where the hotspots are, things better, we probably will be better positioned to develop intervention. The three provinces that you've highlighted, one of the things that we want to do is to do another survey. Because we've had a lot of interventions going into Limpopo, for example, 2 weeks ago, their framework study for all of their teachers. And we also work with some of our partners, UNICEF, studying the children in the free state. And so what we want to do now is maybe next year do another survey to check whether those level of violence in those two provinces have stabilized. And CSTL, Chairperson, the 10 countries are trying to recall them. It's the DRC, Lesotho, Swaziland, South Africa, of course, Namibia, Botswana, Tanzania, and the other three Chairperson, I can't remember. But what we will do is to send you a list of the programs. The program in South Africa coordinated by MIET Africa. The program is sponsored by SADC itself. And we currently are having, we've recently integrated the Care and Play for Schools program into the Care and Support program. Because what we found is through the 9 action areas that we identified, we didn't have a pillar on discrimination. And so we seem to use the pillar on discrimination. I would be more than willing to send we've got support packs that we developed, there's a website that we've got currently working, and the program is really strong in Mpumalanga and in the Eastern Cape. And we are extending to some of our other provinces at the moment. But it's quite an extensive, comprehensive program of homeschool intervention. And what Mpumalanga has done really well is that integrated the program into the curriculum responses. And so what we do is the school falls below 60% in the grade 12 examination, the following year they then come onto the program. The program is completely owned by provinces, but district officials that are dedicated to supporting schools in this fashion. And it works on the basis that you've got to look after the well-being of learners. Other both the education system about you know, around learning and their well-being. And it has phenomenal success in Mpumalanga and some of the learners. So I'll certainly share it, but we'd be more than keen to come to the commission and something to present and present the program. Thank you, Akshay.
Thank you. I thought there were some areas where you needed to come in, but if you're fine, I'll hand over to the DG.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. To respond to the class size, and the pupil teacher ratio in 2013 was approximately 29.8. To explain, basically we indicate that for primary school there should be a teacher pupil ratio of 1:40, and for secondary school is 1:35. That's in terms of when we talk of building. But when we talk of teacher pupil ratio, in reality, the common ground is 1:29.8, I'll just say 1:30. What that means is that it not necessarily means that 1:30, 1:30 learn. There are those people in offices and so forth. There's an the outlier that you need to be cautious about. Even when I say 1:40, when you talk of class size itself, literally the 1:36. That's the average of both secondary and primary. What it means? It means is that we have over 25% of our schools which are micro schools or very small schools with less than 100 learners, which will give you a ratio or average that's quite low. But in reality, you've got pockets in the system of schools that could have classes of 60, 80, and 100. And there's various reasons for that. Could be infrastructure, not enough classes, also shortages of teachers. But I think in the context of our discussion today, is that what is a manageable number that a teacher would require to manage when only in a classroom? If to control 100 could lead to certain acts of behavior that could lead to being violent because the teacher cannot see everything. So I think what we said is that the desirable number is that between 30 and 40. That we should not have more than 40, it could be exceptional 45. But I think these are the things that when in the presentation that if we have to look at last time, and if we do have this manageable number, we could have a reduction in instances where it just allows large class sizes overcrowding to occur. That doesn't mean that even in this class that we call it acceptable, there wouldn't be inconveniences as well. That we will then have to manage on the basis of what the line from. But that gives the teacher a chance of being able to either protect, you know, for their own personal safety as well as for those in their care. I think on the issue of the cabinets and the 500 became cabinets, local closet last week, basically emphasis was in reference to the implementation and the enforcement of bylaws. In fact, in particular for businesses, which in our sector, we talk about the cabinets that are opposite schools, which basically as local municipality, that's not being enforced. And it's something that has been emphasized and together with COFCA, and as Ivan pointed out at the chair, that there has to be an interdepartmental as well as intersphere cooperation that has to be involved in dealing with those with cabinets. In fact, in some cases, an example was such that you have that these were issued as legal permits for a person to own cabinets in a township or in a business area, but not necessarily opposite the school. And they have just gone and used that and opened 10 or 20 of those cabinets, and one of them, a few of them happen to be in front of the school, which is actually the illegal one in terms of the bylaw. So I think that is something we'll have to monitor and work with our other colleagues in other departments. I think our other point was about the safety of our train to using school infrastructure and the toilet as an example. That it's only now that when we build a new school, we build a toilet that's different for children in the foundation phase that we have. And we even try to put furniture that's different in terms of their size, which is age appropriate. But I think in the infrastructure that we've inherited, there are some that are very far away in the toilet, as well as the condition of it puts children at risk as well. And I think it's just not only the small children. I mean, even the bigger children from a health and perspective as well, there could be diseases that they could contract as well in using the facility. So that's something that, is part of that bigger and beyond this what we're discussing today. I think the other one, the last point I'd like to make is that where we've seen that, if you take on the point of where parents have sent their children to other provinces and left them in the care of people, believing that the money they pay them, they are giving the children the best care. That's not necessarily the way it happens. When we refer to the community, we're referring to the community that's basically localized around the school, whose children basically go to that school as well. So if parents and communities in which those schools belong take ownership of those schools, where we've seen that most often, I think even if we do a study, we'll find that the incidences that we're talking about maybe eliminated or on another level basically on a very small scale, because they take care of the children and their property. And with such an example, which is not really one that you want to promote, even in gangster, where gangsterism is prominent in the community, and if there is a particular gangster that is there that's very powerful, basically you'll find that in some instances children are more safe because that gangster in some way is respected more than the police or any other authority. And if anyone has to do something to those learners in that school, there's some kind of justice that's needed out. But what I'm saying is that kind of example that you don't want to promote, but you will find examples of that where children are even safer than what we may be promoting at the end of the day or we wish to see for them. But it's not something that we want, but I think what we're looking at and being put out is a collective effort that's not just only within government or basic education, but it's, I think the next presentation also will assist in some degree, but also there's some limitations in that as well.
Thank you very much for the response. I know members do have some follow-up briefly, so yeah, I like that. Thank you. Let it be though. Can I give this? Can I open up for follow-ups, please? I know everyone has indicated that they just want to. Honourable Fund of Rights, you need to get sense.
I'll get the example, nobody longer than me.
Okay.
Chair, I'm sure that was reading my mind because I wrote here that you spoke about the booklet, you know, on the phobic person. I often wonder, I mean, we are here to prepare our children for the opportunity and making a life for the masters. But due to the nature of our country and the overwhelming majority of our children come from poor or rural circumstances, that some parents maybe so they've got to live somewhere else to make a living, is the curriculum in any way catering for this? Not just largely. I mean, to dish out a booklet as an example might be a good idea. What is the teaching the children? How to accommodate each other in the broader picture of your human rights or whatever. How do we make sure that, I mean, if I'm in a school and I get abused or attacked or bullied or whatever, I might not know. But one day my mother might come, so are there a place where we actually teach children in school what this is all about and how bad it can be, you know, to become a citizen. I'm not saying it was my school subject, but, you know, if that is the nature, then let's do it. But are we really doing something to stop it? So it's not going to stop it up there. So not everybody is affected. They just fall not learning off. What are we doing in school to make sure that we all look after one another, if I like to do it?
You are not that much of a pleasure.
Chair, I will be very short. Something just pops up. With regards to cyberbullying and sexting, what about a relationship we built up with the Department of Communication? Wouldn't that suffice? Just a question.
Thank you.
So, thank you, Chair. I knew there was something that I wanted to ask, and that was specifically about social workers. That was indicated as one of the effective strategies, increase access to counselors through social workers. And most of our schools do not have access. I don't think many of us expect individual access, but certainly on a district level. Most of our schools in Bafokeng do not have access. How strong is the push by the department It all depends on budget. But I really appreciate Dr. Chu's comments. Thank you.
I think this question, mine is it's just a follow-up on this. You find that there are schools that are trying to implement strict measures of flexibility, but they are being discouraged of the procedures that are there to follow when dealing with criminal cases, like the one that Chapter mentioned, child was selling a hard cake because of question, and this child was family, but because of our rules and regulations regarding the school has no right to expel the child should, etc. You must look for a school or take the school. How is this child going to feel that expel? And the other thing, there are these 14 days of writing a letter to a parent in 14 days. So long procedures. These long procedures sometimes make that the case in a vanished up in the air, because maybe this church, you know, this time of year, the last term, is when more special the senior learners, knowing that they are on exit point. They will do all these anything and all these knowing that they are about to write exam, they will not be excelled. Their cases will take so many days before they are here, and then by the time when they are bound to appear for this case, then they are already out. And it's another problem. You know, there are so many problems that go with this. Speaking about this 500, I noticed that this Iliwa that I would like that it was dedicated to education is one day feeding the school. Around the school, in front of the gate, we were even afraid to pass through those centers or those people that I don't know, unemployed people were. I don't know whether it's a car wash, car wash or what in front of the school. This school is so exposed in violence that they have now made a steel ceiling. Defense, what we use for fence, they have used it for ceiling because of the regularity that occurs. What measures can we do to have such things that we speak to municipalities not to allow such things? Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
That's
right.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
My apologies. Honourable Member, our approach is that these measures we're talking about must be put in life orientation. Now, the problem with life orientation is that it's got low stakes in our schools. And so we've gone to the Council of Education Ministers very recently to say to them that there's a series of measures that you need to initiate to raise the stakes of life orientation. And the Council has given us its support. So we're currently looking at how we improve the textbooks that are available in life orientation, which is to we have open source textbooks that we can properly tackle, that would be age appropriate, but that would eventually teach the values that we're talking about. Life orientation has a component on civic education there. It's quite important, but we know that in many of our schools it's not being taught. And we further say that it might be a good idea to use some of the turning points in our history, so to contextualize civic education based on the history of Africa. So that's the process that we've started. It is important in the context that we might have a conversation with higher education institutes. So the one component is to strengthen the checkpoints, but the other one might be that we've got teachers, we must prepare our teachers better to be able to teach them. We do work with the Department of Communication on cyberbullying, and we're consulting them now again as we are revising the book that we're putting out. On the level of the social work one is a, you know, is a very difficult one. You know, the one part of it is an issue of budget. But we have done, you know, in the last 2 months, we've done a plan. We've fostered that plan, and we've sent it through to the DG to say to him, you know, to ask whether it's possible that we put in those poorer districts of the country. A team of three people that we put in. I must point out to you, Oliver Lovemore, as well, that I'm told that we don't have enough social workers to do this work. We don't have enough psychologists, you know, to go into every school. And so we are looking at how we can build district-based teams that we obviously, you know, we must provide a transport to for them to then, you know, serve a school in that fashion. Now, it's not ideal, but I think probably a place that we need to start to do just that. Honorable Masson, I mean, you raise very, very valid issues, but you know, the big thing about children is that we also have a responsibility to protect them. And once you are excluded from school, the one thing you know, Honorable Chairperson, is that for example, if you expel a girl child from a school, the chances are that within a year, she'll be pregnant. And so schooling is protected. And so the measures that we put in place are all in place to protect learners at the school. In some instances, like the one that you refer to, when, you know, burglary and damage, you can't have, you know, your computers go up and the next day they know them. Obviously, you must have better physical infrastructure security measures. And, you know, although we discourage those, because, you know, as you know, criminal find ways around those infrastructural measures. But certainly as a shorter solution, that is what you would encourage in the school that you have mentioned. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. I'm not sure, did you say anything you want to say before I read the presentation?
I'm trying not to say because I may open another debate.
You're being
I think, you know, that to start with the Honorable Lacan's point, that was in the presentation yesterday, that we basically, you know, since 1994, our constitution, our people, our children, are even starting to understand their rights. So when some of these things, because we put them in place and when they utilize them, then we, you know, I say to myself, can't complain that you're using the 14 days or whatever. If your file gets lost in the school, when the file gets lost in a police station or in a court, there's nothing different that's happening as well in the country. But I think the whole issue of parenting is something that we'll have to, you know, it's not maybe for us today, but it's a discussion that needs to be taken, that some of these values actually start from the home, but there are different circumstances as to the homes our children come from. For some of our children, maybe the school is actually the place of safety. Even while we're talking of things that we need to get right. So I think we need to keep that in mind, that as Dr. Whittle said, when you take this harsh, it may be the right decision when you want to apply your mind in a very cold and clinical manner. But when you look at the examples we have that are out there in the country where people are doing, you know, killing other people and not even getting to be put behind bars and so on, it's the kind of role models that we do provide. But you then take this young life and you decide that you will give them the harsh sentence, which in the end of the day, they haven't even started their living. Whereas the others who have had a chance to live have done greater deeds that are worse and basically are allowed to walk the streets of the country. So I think there's those things that we have to keep in mind as well. Although we're not trying to condone one, you know, what I'm saying is that you now want to send the child who may have just committed this first act to a, what do you call it, a school of, the reform school and so on, you then set them off on another path that if you treat them differently, they may have asked them out. So I think we need to keep that in mind. I think on the social workers as well, It's something that the proposal has been put. We have, there's no final way, but we're looking at how to be implemented. But also in implementing, it should not just be a one-stop. We need to make sure it's in some form sustainable, even if it's at a district level. I think we will be looking at how to cut our budget and reprioritize in that respect. But I think I want to thank the committee for the opportunity, and as the colleagues have indicated, we will come back and report on progress on many of the issues that we've already discussed.
Thank you very much for the presentation and the good discussion with members on that one. So I think we all agree that the basic thing is the classroom. What is happening in the classroom? The teaching and learning taking place in the classroom. Because really we all agree that I might not have done any research on this one, but it's a known fact that those schools that even perform best in academically, those are the schools where we find less violence in them. So there is always that correlation, and we all agree that if ever we can make sure it can be a point that when you talk of those triple T's, they indeed happen in our schools. We are going to be getting less and less of these thousands and millions and all this safety that you are talking about. And I think that is the fundamental discussion that we need today, of which we will be getting into GLCC, making sure as to say how do we build that culture of human rights in our community in schools. And what it is that you can do when it comes to that. QLCC, can I hand over to you now, where really for years we've been interested in knowing what is happening when it comes to this campaign since 2009, where we're expecting this campaign to make sure that they foster the community to be involved on the issues of education. Where we want to see this QLCC campaigning going out today to make sure that elite education becomes a societal issue, as it has been announced by the President of the country. We can say proudly as a committee that always when we go out to our site, it's one of the questions that we always even ask from schools that say, what is it that ed schools are doing when it comes to the issue of QLCC? And we are fresh from the oversight work from Mpumalanga, where the committee were very proud and happy to hear from Mpumalanga in one of the schools. I can't remember what the name of the school was. Sakane Primary School in that province. We saw really that through the involvement of the community, the school can be what we are saying the school should be. A school can be a place of learning and teaching. A school can be a place of safety. So indeed, we know that there are areas where QLCC has worked very well. And we are saying from that province, we're all proud to say the campaign is there, the campaign is alive. But today, what we are going to do is nothing. We are going to be hearing from you, even from other parts of the country where we haven't reached as a community, to say what is happening when it comes to this campaign. Can I then hand over to you, Edith, to the
Thank you, Honorable Chair, but that was the
Thank you, Jesse. Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, I'm going to take you through the slides that we will also be doing tandem responses to the committee questions. I think this is indeed the appropriate time for us to be reflecting on the state of the quality of learning and teaching center. Precisely because in your introductory comments you've made a point that it's been in existence for a while, and what we need to do is to reflect actively on efficacy and its development across the sector as a key mandate for the education department and sectoral partners. At its inception, this was considered to be a social mobilization platform to elevate the issue of education being a societal matter. And for that reason, I think it's also necessary that we reflect on that ground. We need to take account of all of those undertakings made in this founding statement. It was believed that education would be elevated from simply being a departmental preoccupation or concern into a broader societal match that also came in the context of 2009 of the government identifying education as a basic priority, as outcome management now commonly knows. It was essentially seen as the quality learning and teaching campaign and not as a programmatic development as an institutionalized location within the department. However, in this ongoing development, and as you see in this particular presentation, we will present an update on how exactly that has unfolded over the last 2 years of existence. The social contract was then formed between the education department and its provincial formation with all of the stakeholders in the community. It's endeavored to promote accountability for all of the sectoral partners, which I think primarily at its founding stages included the department and its officials, teachers through their public formations in terms of the organized teaching profession, and then learners. Parents come on board slightly later in its founding stages, but at its inception, it was intended to include the governing body, associations, etc., so that you see that kind of sectoral partnership undertaken the social compact to ensure that there was a promotion of accountability. A set of pledges were developed for each of those sectoral partners, and in terms of building this accountability, it was to ensure that there would be a striving to adhere to the non-negotiables as was the common definition of the role of the teachers being on time, in classrooms, and that we also needed to have the availability of text for learners to ensure that curriculum interpretation and access to learning would be most fruitfully and appropriately located within a conducive environment for learning and teaching. And then finally also for there to be a commitment to the delivery of tasks in terms of that commitment to the framework for conducive learning and teaching. So the major thrust of the QRPC was to provide that platform also for communities and society at large to ensure that there would be active and constructive engagement around those common principles. And that this would be working towards improvement of the context for learning and teaching. Whilst the QRPC still remains a campaign in the form of the social contract between the department and the social partners, it's also important for us to familiarize ourselves with what that strategic orientation was for the QRPC. The QRPC was intended also to take its strategic thrust from both the priorities identified by Cabinet and by the Ministerial Programs of Action. We've seen that unfold over the last administration and also in the current one. And also, I think particularly, you've made mention of this in your introductory comments, how responsive the QRPC and the partnership is to the needs expressed by communities for education. There was no, at the outset, no permanent or fixed program for the QRPC, except that it was meant to focus and focus all of the efforts and in time to come also identify what its key programs would be and its deliverables in terms of those priorities identified by the various, by the ministry or by provincial leadership. So the main task of this QRPC initiative was intended to be a catalytic agent in terms of the quality improvement demands within each of those locations. I'm making reference to a slide which I think in all of your documents somewhere later in the fact, slide 12. I've put forward in terms of exercising what that strategic orientation is, and I will refer to it again in summary at the end to remind us of it. So the major task also in the central function was focused around the 10-point plan to actualize the roadmap for education in South Africa. And you see that this particular focus has rolled out over the years of existence. I want to take you to the pillars, which is on your original slide 3, the pillars underpinning community mobilization. For the QRPC, I think across the board, participation is central to its existence, that it is intended to involve both communities and other strategic partners and stakeholders who are regularly consulted, and they also contribute to a particular program or intervention that is required in order to promote the quality improvement for learning and teaching. And that these interventions are being able to define and control developments within the particular context that have been identified. Also around collaboration, it was intended also and continues to be that leadership would be involved consistently throughout all of the phases of the program. And that the quality or the stakeholders within there. It would be simply led by the Department of Education. It's intended to be a common platform where all of these different parties would have an equal voice. So we've seen how through the process and maybe through a range of efforts that the community has been able to in a sense calm the waters in the often turbulent context that we find learning and teaching has to be conducted in. And it has certainly, I think, on the basis of that equality also expanded the range of participants in the initial team of sectoral partners, so much so that we've now seen an inclusion of learner formation and not only learners groups at particular schools or sites, but also broader learner formation and other members of the education family. The partnership, I think, has been key to the pillars for community mobilization, was that it was based on a shared recognition that if we were to secure success in all of the efforts, that joint decision-making by all of the stakeholder partners was actually evident. Also on the basis of equity, that it would not be any way different to what our constitutional principles demand from us, and that is that we would be basing this on equity in society, on class, gender, race, class, levels of literacy, and even health status. We've seen how quite often learners are ostracized from schools because of their health status. And this has now been also commonly addressed through the efforts of the CRTC to ensure that we have equity in the place of learning and teaching. Quality obviously is the biggest non-negotiable in the pillars which underpin the efforts of the CRTC, and I don't think I need to expand on that at this stage. And the key functions of the CRTC structures, that since 2009 we saw that in the existing stages of the CRPC, there was a very narrow definition, and I'm very pleased to say that since we first presented to the portfolio committee in the previous administration on the work and the efforts of the CRPC, there has been tremendous growth across provinces. It has been launched in all the 9 provinces at different levels of capacity. It's become visible. And I think there's also a clear impact in terms of the contribution made by the team in this various format in the provincial and national level in those various flashpoints that have emerged where the KLC has played a significant role in contributing to the work of provincial education departments and that of national. In the northwest, East Cape, Mpumalanga, and in the Eastern Cape and in the Kumba district, we've seen here that it has demonstrated model of good practice and it also involved both state, civil society and business in the partnership within the education sector. We're looking on the next slide some of the critical achievements of the past 5 years that has launched nationally, as I said earlier. It has also been able to issue a QLTC guide which was to assist in terms of the establishment of CRTC formation, as well as it has also demonstrated that the support of the role of the ELRC in collaborating with the department and CRTC structures in terms of assisting in its development, because I think what needs to be noted is that the CRTC was not, because it's not a programmatic formation of the department, it doesn't sit within the budget structure, often has to really deal with very limited time to do its work. So we've had to rely, I think, quite clearly on the efforts of our sectoral partners to ensure that we're able to do the work of expanding the mission of the CRTC. Likewise, I think, in terms of the achievements, we've seen a dynamism and greater involvement of community interest as demonstrated in the province of this affair. In terms of the establishment of the structures,
They also obviously operate at different levels of functionality, so it would be easy for us to pretend that all of this is well across all of the provinces. You'll see the unevenness. I'm sure the colleagues that will be responding to some of the questions as well will be able to speak to some of that. But increasingly, the involvement of parents in terms of playing a stronger oversight and monitoring role in schools, such as at a very basic level, the late coming of learners or teachers, instances of bullying, etc. Those are all beginning to present evidence of greater buy-in at the community level. We also thought over the last 5 years that the network of support, which then involves government, business, communities and individuals in the adoption of an underperforming schools campaign, that this was led largely by that particular support, which was signed in 2011. And also other significant relationships, as I said, included the ERP, but also faith in terms of the monitoring of the faith code conduct and the adherence of teachers, especially, to the strict code of ethics, and that would guide their performance and their professional conduct at school level. We've also seen that the QPC has managed to collaborate with other departmental units. Dr. Whittle's referring, I think, needs input to the large extent that kind of areas of overlap where the work of the ERC, of the QLTC, has been directed by social issues that have emerged on the ground and that have fought over and created a context where effective learning and teaching could not happen. And that, I think, has led to greater internal departmental and across provincial within the sector, where we were able to see collaboration there, especially around the work of monitoring through the normal evaluation, monitoring and evaluation conduct of our department. We've been able to include sections in the reporting templates which assist in our work identification, especially around school readiness monitoring and other ongoing work that we do in support of school policy and other parliamentary committees. The QRPC Directorate also collaborated over in the time with the National Examination and Assessment Directorate in the monitoring of the writing of the NET exams. And these areas are normally in support of those hotspots that are being targeted for ongoing support and monitoring in those areas of underperformance which have been targeted in the past. So it's also in this instance that the QRPC continuing support the SGE units within the department to assist with the functionality and enhancing the functionality of SGEs at school level. And therefore this particular establishment of a QLTC directorate within the department, we've seen all of the units represented as a member of the inner team within the department supporting the directors within our teacher branch, which work in support of SGBs and in strengthening all the school governing bodies and in understanding their role as a key sector partner. And we saw this evidence in the recent 2015 March election of SGBs. In the past financial year, the achievements of the QLTC included also supporting the ministry in its visit to the Limpopo, and the involvement in the Kari Goodyear Roadshows. I have already mentioned the elections, but also in the various endeavors around the country where we, in this particular province, also successfully achieved some of the intended goals of the work of the QRPC. For Malanga, there's also significant work done to facilitate community meetings and stakeholder engagement with the ministry. And in this particular area also, stability returns to particular areas that were unstable and where we now see the evidence of improvement in the learning and teaching environment. In the Eastern Cape, the QLTC was also able to pay special attention to the troubled districts that were visited last by the Book Fellows Committee as well, in Cape and Port Beaufort. And this is an ongoing work to ensure that the commitment undertaken in those communities, like the implementation of the post-provisioning, etc., that would be continued and supported by the QLTC team. Also, in support of the KZN efforts, the QLTC also supported the education fund
as well as the support to the MEC and maybe the budget issues. Northern Cape, likewise, with the tensions around the road forum, the QRC also plays a significant role in supporting the work of the minister and the MEC there to resolve the crisis. Likewise, I think the Northern West, here we've seen the QRC structure being institutionalized in the real terms within the departmental structure. I think, however, here we would be also reflecting on whether, in fact, when the department does, in fact, establish such an institutionalized structure, whether it, in fact, enhances the work or whether it simply bureaucratizes the work of the CLGC. So I think it's about striking the balance that remains an ongoing challenge for those provinces that are chosen particular route. And when I come to the recruiting side, I'll put that put out how that differs in particular provinces. In the case that also, Trent and MEC have been using the QRTC in terms of award-based structures, and in this instance particularly, they've been able to confront and deal with identification of key societal challenges, where we've seen the drug abuse by youth, teen expectancy, violence in schools, etc., all being targeted in the efforts there of the premier of the MEC, because of their support of the project to ensuring that the education of those matters equally addressed. In Kansas, they also opted for a board-based model, and here, through the work of the various of Indigo, which was coordinated here by the various QLCC partners, we've seen a very successful work being done towards the Housing Education Summit, and obviously the work was chosen from that. Western Cape, likewise, QLCC was involved in the diverse science, if you recall, that in some instances, with the challenges identified through the farm water struggle there, we've also been able to look through the work of the QLCC in this province, the work of identification of child labour and the abuse of that on farms, but also identification, I think, here by the MCMHOD, of the higher levels of fetal alcohol syndrome, and the rise in teenage pregnancy levels, and gang violence research by Dr. Whittle, particular presentation. Should we list the key partners of the CLTC, as I said, space again through the management of the education and the regulatory measures to ensure professional conduct by educators, the ELC through the dispute resolution mechanism, and then of course through the NABLAC basic education report, the adoption of the range of underperforming schools as the targeted sites of intervention. More recently, the NECT, where the QRC structures have also been functional, the NECT has had to rely on the QRC structures for their outreach into communities and to target similar work with the key stakeholders. It also includes NGOs within the education sector, the various sister government departments, to varying degrees of involvement, as well as the business community and state-based community, increasingly getting involved in addressing some of the social fields in schools together with the SUV factors there. So the key challenges in the implementation of the work of the QLTC, I think we need to face quite a few hard facts that it obviously is related also to the location of the QLTC in terms of areas of operation within the structures of government, whether it's at national or provincial level, for it to actively involve and focus efforts around the programs of action that have been identified there. Whether these structures are ideally situated in MEC offices or whether they sit in the belly of the organizational structure, the QLTC has, with varying degrees of effectiveness, be able to do its work. So whilst we've listed up in the board achievements, there's a lot that sits in the underbelly of what it's not able to do, which I think the department would be leading in terms of its identification and listing of concerns. So here, I mean, quite often we've seen that where some of the structures are located firmly within the organizational structure of the department, it can quite often be caught up in bureaucratic red tape that would hamper the effective working and rollout of the intervention program. In order to execute this mandate. We've also seen here that the campaign requires that all stakeholders that have originally pledged themselves to the objectives of the campaign are not all equally involved or engaged
in playing their role to advance the aims of the agenda. So where we've seen particular flashpoints, it would be either as a result of one or two of the sectoral partners not actually sticking to a pledge that is originally undertaken. The funding format for the campaign also requires a review, because there are particular operational requirements that would demand expenditure or the deployment of our QRPC officials into the field, and quite often there is no funding base that fully supports the work on the efforts of the QRPC. The QRPC is also meant to be a subcommittee of every SGD, and whilst in some cases the six and sponsors have been structured in place, they exist in name only, and they're not all totally immersed in the business of site and school management. They set those social ills disappear. They just sit there, the most critical expression of it. So it's at that level also that I think we need to be taking stock of how exactly the policy has been taken at every level of organization within the sector. The QRPC has been drawn into some of the key campaigns of the department in terms of active oversight work. It also needs to ensure that the curricular programs, like the Drop All and Leave campaign, mobilization around the libraries project, etc., the community awareness around the significance and the relevance of the annual national assessment, as well as the work of the National Senior Certificate support programs, and all of that is in place, and that we're starting as far as possible to level the playing field. So the community mobilization and the school's role in assisting curbing the social ills in this one and the previous presentation, all of that sits in the work plan of the QRPC officials. They also support do a lot of support in the work of community mobilization to address the issues of adult illiteracy, and also support the work of mobilizing support for the recruitment campaigns within the Vishaka. I've mentioned already that the relations between schools and communities are given expression to the policy committees where they exist at school level, and also the engagement with state communities to the army that should be assisting with social mobilization to address the lack of community values. And of course support to all of the education summits open to their process. This particular slide, the next one here, is presenting just a national picture of where the QRPC structures are located. In the three states of Malanga, North West, Northern Cape, Eastern Cape, Caledon and Gauteng, we see that these are located in the political offices of the MECs in each of the provinces. Western Cape and the Mpumalanga are different, where they are located within the offices of the Superintendent General. And I think that provides a bit of a picture also in terms of how provinces have taken up and where they place these. Just to recap on the strategic orientation, I think that it's very important that we also take stock of the cross-cutting responsibilities that the QRPC structures have. So where we look at the strategic orientation, it's also to take cognizance of the transversal nature of the business of creating a conducive environment for learning and teaching, which is why the location of the QRPC is a really, really important one for us to consider. And whilst we acknowledge that the flashpoints that have been identified areas where we've got ongoing discontent, it's in these flashpoints that we also need to then talk about the fact that there has been some greater stability within the sector in the main, and that we've also seen that in the previous the issue of labour fees has also been slightly to the work of the QRPC in terms of identifying issues within the relations of the sectoral partners. So that the actual issues of where we are ongoing, where we still see ongoing evidence of other discontent, the quality coordinating team and the provincial structures of the QRPC have a critical role to play in terms of ensuring that the strategic orientation is focused. In terms of recommendations that have been made, the team in the department have mobilized actively for the strengthening of the QRPC
and the enhancement of its functionality across all the provinces. And this would be supported by possibly stronger regulatory measures that would guide the work of the OCC activities. The team has also in its assessment that national oversight found that as far as possible it would be better for these offices to be located in the offices of MEPs for impact to be felt appropriate across the system. And then finally also to address the issue of adequate resourcing for this to be for to arm the QRPC in order for it to do timely interventions and to be responsive to critical developments on the ground. And I think ultimately what was intended with the establishment of the QRPC Cafe, it was to make all schools centers of excellence and with the support of all of the critical partners to do that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dirigent. Honourable members, that was the presentation. Can I open up for you for questions, comments? I think that the government must honourable member of that is this year. Honourable member.
On the ground, it's a construction. If it was used very, very well, we would be having all the problems, and even we would be having a fair presentation. Because it's according to it, it allows many, many stakeholders all over the community. When we visit school, we don't see the functionality of the schools. We don't see the functionality of the schools. Most of the schools don't even have that structure, don't even know what that structure is. And the second one is how effective are they in terms of giving reports? Because the schools have to give reports to the second and this is the right. And which we will then go to the students. Are they doing that? To me, not in the best. Not in the best. I don't know whether the other way you can even report. We are saying they are doing very, very well. Thank you very much. That's what I want to comment on.
Another also, final class.
Thank you. The previous speaker touched on what I was going to say, but the promise that you say we have to curb the terms and water that all schools must be centers of excellence. On this other side that we were at, even though Rwanda is being praised, they aren't. If you go on personal oversight to farm schools and rural schools, the absolute apathy by staff and learners alike is so prevalent because there is no interest given to these schools by the district officers or by the community. And something has to be done about that because we're not going to get anybody on board if interest is only shown in the schools that are performing. And then with regard to the engagement of faith communities, how are you going to interact with these institutions? Because it could become problematic as some parents say that you favor one denomination over the other. Because we have various denominations that have to be taken into consideration. And then last question, the SMEs that have to come on board. How many schools do not at this point in time have functional SMEs? How are these schools
supported in ensuring that the SDGs are closed? Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I'm not clear from the first question I was asked by my colleague, I'm not the only person who is skeptical about the OCC. I have not been just single to the universe, but I'm very skeptical of the reported protected. But more so, because there are no talks. I haven't seen any measurable talks for QLCD or any not in presentation or anywhere else, and maybe I'm missing it. Any targets by which we can measure the success or improvement as a result of
fuel PC and then the actual measures to show that fuel PC is working. I mean, I'm not sure what targets you would use, but the numbers of players attending SUV elections might be a target. Are there such targets? It's not you that this is not working. At some point, you've got to say this has worked and just stop it. Because it's costing you. There are many. You talk about interaction with NGOs, and I'm sure there are many across the country. You know that I'm from Eastern Cape, and in Eastern Cape there's a General Motors Foundation, GM Foundation, that does amazing work. Now they have got a program they're rolling out into the Eastern Cape, which focuses on community interaction. According to Roger Matlock, who heads up the GM Foundation, they are having amazing results. I don't know the numbers. I mean, I should always give them, but. Really, my would be at least if you consider partnering, if you say, we all agree, I think, that community interaction with schools is difficult. It really is. But I believe that the QLPT campaign, as much as this might be a very positive presentation, is actually achieving that. But if there are NGOs out there, like the GM Foundation, partner with it. And I've thought of it for that matter. Let them deal with the tools, or at least if they, what they are doing, find the centers of excellence, find what they are doing, and to implement that. I don't think that what they're doing is good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Can we check it in? In this of the Honorable Mayor, QHCC, a good campaign. The cornerstone that is lacking behind is monitoring and supporting keeping the schools of the QLCC committee on top. Because as Mr. Mrs. was now presented, mentioning some history. I noticed that if virtual teaching is reactive and proactive, it is there when there's an incident. For me, if it can be monitored, that it should be alive at school, and there should be a person in the district, not in the MPC office, in the district that monitoring that this school is working, and you will not have the dysfunction of that city. You will not have the problems that you are trying to start with the presentation of your staff. Coming to me last when I questioned them, we are school for funding because I'm from the university. How do we ensure that QLCC is where is needed and fundable if the school will find the school principal saying that I'm the check of person? I must be in class. I must do administration. I must attend the meetings with anybody without any administration gap. How do we ensure whether we are responsible to assume multi-stage classes whereby one teaches from grade 5 to grade 10? I don't think that's possible. How do we ensure that QLCC where if the allocation, we say what is the 50% of the allocation of staff is equal across the board, and we don't differentiate to say this is the school, this is the leading school, and so on. That point is on better. Similarly, we as department how do we accommodate them in this
that area, for in this case, you know, Malanga, really, I meant something whereby when we are given the profile of the problem, each and every school has a special school, a full service school, and the pattern of school, they have two types of school. So, if there are these things, like my problem in Northern Cape, all the special schools are in Kenya. All the other districts don't have structures. And then we speak to how do we accommodate those children that are born in areas like this, the district, like the country, where there are no special schools at all for children that are being have to start school in the East Coast of special school in Kenya are the East Coast. So I would like to spread this to and to accommodate all the
elements. Thank you. Another question.
Chairperson, I think my thought to this one is the question of strengthening the QLCC rather than saying if we can't work, we cannot be able to do either way with it. And emphasize the question of saying, let us not rely mostly on the reports that we are getting from the provinces. Let us strengthen our monitoring system so that we can be able to go there, hands on, and find out what is happening. Really, the campaign is a good campaign that can be able to assist us because it gets everybody within one room that we can be able to achieve a lot of things out of it if we can be able to strengthen the issue of monitoring. And I cannot go back to the issue of the special schools because but it's safe to say they need attention of the department because they were overlooked for quite some time. So even with campaigns like this one, they are there. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Member, for this question. The last time we had a presentation from PLCC, we did give us a picture as to the launch PLCC throughout the country in all the provinces. And there was a promise that, it was a commitment that we're going to be developing the guidelines, the PLCC guidelines, translated in a number of languages, if you can update us on that one, because indeed, especially even as we move out, and even yourself as you go out on the issues of PLCC, that the communities are aware of what's happening and you are in a position to reach out to those schools. But again, on the picture of the provinces, as you have said, you have been launching all the provinces, but you know that the level of visibility of QLCC is varied from province to province. And again, for me, I always say, you need to be open up. Sometimes I know when we come to this presentation, as if we are going to repeat one of the same thing even from the previous presentation, but it does help because for you to open up and to say you go to those provinces, yes, we have highlighted some of the challenges, but I don't think it gets to tell us as to say with the commitments that you have, how far are you going, what might be the things that I think are moving from for that thing. Yes, there is so much that you have done, I can see, but maybe from that picture of those provinces, even giving us to say where QLCC is being located, it should even give us more understanding if you say from evaluation, if it is located in the MS's office, vis-a-vis those that are allocated in the SG's office, are we seeing any difference? Which one is meaning? But of course, I think from the position that you are in as a DVD, you need even to guide the provinces and say, how can they learn from each each other's good practices, so that whatever report and the presentation that we have, we can have that sense also of comparison to say how do we intend building on the lessons that we have learned throughout the country. But I'm very happy when I even see the campaign, the forthcoming campaign that we had officially from this year moving forward, to say, if indeed you can stick to those campaigns, for me, I can see the visibility of QLTC even growing bigger in the communities out there, because there are so many things that we put here, the Department of Basic Education coming to present, but we always ask, how are we advocating this to the communities out there? We're talking of the certificate now for MCN, those who are not going to make it. How are we making sure that our communities know about these two initiatives that this department is coming up with? We're talking of the educational certificate that is catering for those vulnerable learners that you have and vulnerable communities, but how are we making sure that our communities do get to understand these things? And this PLC, this campaign is one arm that you have in the department that is going to do that. So with these two campaigns, I can see that the department is going to be able to reach out to the communities. You are always saying the winning nation is the winning nation. There's this program of drop on a good campaign. How are we reaching down there even to involve the communities? But I think what you have listed here, it shows us that you are moving forward. We do have things that you are targeting to benefit. And I think it is a good move. These are the targets that you have clearly shown us to say QLTC is going to be engaging on this. Can I just then hand over to you to respond on the question of the emerging number of things?
Thank you. I'm sorry, I didn't understand that. We will be sharing the questions about the schedule of education. I just want to respond directly. First of all, I think it was Honourable Lovell who referred to the interaction with NGOs. I think, and I just would positively indicate that throughout this big program, because I said that this is the unit that dovetails with all of the efforts of the transfer for nature across the department, there already an interaction with the Little Motion Foundation, and hopefully we'll see a rollout and positive impact of that. And also, I think next week, or the week after we present on this week, there will be greater details around it here. So I just wanted to echo those questions there. I think that the around the issue of oversight and opportunities that it does present, I'm not sure if I understood whether that was a question or just a comment in terms of Honourable Bosch's contribution there. That you were speaking, I think, in terms of your examples of the first oversight that has been conducted by the sub-islands and the OAS committee, that the evidence in terms of the relative lack of calm in terms of the sector. I think the uneasiness is admitted by teams. There are huge challenges for a very small team, but as I said, they doesn't necessarily enjoy the support of the institutionalized program. This is a unit that cuts about in every one of the provinces. Maybe the team from the CLBC is also benefiting from the details about that. But the examples of, and I think it was only supported in terms of the concerns that Mendebat had shown about in their own side, because of the lack of evidence on the ground. Clearly, they would be unevenness, and it's not something we are trying to mark or hide. I think there's enough in the presentation that speaks to that. I'm going to just ask the other members of the committee to add, and I'll take their ones, the questions that are left open. I've got Mr. Kumo who will add, and then next goes Mr. Sekabelo. We'll start with Mr. Sekabelo. Would you like to go first?
Thanks, Jefferson and Honourable Members. I think broadly the criticism around CLCC on the ground is something that's really understood. And from the minister's side, because we're also working very closely with the unit at Advanced CLCC, that one area there where there's an appreciation that there has to be some vibrance around the work that CLCC is doing. Because I think the other thing, Honourable Members, perhaps it's the manner in which we craft the report, and we've been talking about that with Mr. Mboma,
there is also sometimes a temptation to see the work of KLTC in isolation of the work that the minister does. Because when the minister and the deputy minister goes out and meets community, the platform that they use is the KLTC. But perhaps the manner in which we report on these activities and these achievements, and I think it's Honorable Lovemore who spoke strongly around the questions of measure. So that we measure this. And that's the point that we take in the call. The other question is around how do we interact with faith-based without creating bias, a particular reason. KLTC works with all the bodies that represent different faiths. For instance, your South African Council of Churches, your National Interfaith Council of South Africa, South African Council of Bishops Conference, and all other bodies that represent a different faith. So there's no way in which KLTC works specifically with a particular faith at the expense of others. It works with bodies that represent. For instance, if you look at the SACC and the National Interfaith Council of South Africa, your traditional healers are there, your charismatic churches are there, your mainline churches are there, your Pentecostal churches. So everybody else is actually part of this social partners that can be working with. Chair, I think upfront the slides have shown that there's an appreciation that QLCC's work and impact is uneven in different provinces. However, there are clear good work of QLCC in provinces. And those provinces are cited, for instance, the role and the work that KLTC plays in dealing with a problem that besetted Northern Cape, particularly Joe Morolo, can't be not recorded as a poverty. Because learners were barred from going to school for a long time by the road forum, but through those engagements, through the activities of KLTC, it created a platform and environment for the minister and the minister to be able to address the community. It was not easy, however, it was the work of KLCC that we're also seeing in Northwest. If you look at the work of the KLCC, it really shows that there will be good practices, there will be pockets there, but that does not dismiss the members' concerns and the guidance that they are raising in terms of amplifying the work of KLCC. I think challenge me with that because the rest of the other issues I think, for instance, or the point that I want to make also, working with individual social partners like different companies and so on, has not discounted the fact that QLCC is also a platform within the work of the NECC does. Because if you look at the flow of work, how this NECC came into being, from the slide that was showing the NEDLAC Accord, up to where the NECC was established and the current work that the NECC is doing and the work that the KLCC is involved in that. There is clearly working together. But I think, Chair, and perhaps this is the point, is how do we report and the measure of the success members are ready, which we need perhaps to do in greater amount. Thanks.
No, I wanted to go to the issue that was raised by, I think we're going to give us that date moving forward as well, in terms of how we are going to pass it. But it also the measure of how do we measure. Because we really argue that definitely each year is positive result, is doing some good work. Who would this play for itself? This is the case in point. Last year, it was not enough. In the department. And then we were called by the Ministry of Kukula and deployed by the HPG board. And then we might not have honorable Ngudi, we might not have actually gone to school to establish pressure. But we managed to galvanize and mobilize stakeholders. We have some kind of critical role to play in terms of staying around the infrastructure and so forth. This is one. But two, for instance, it couldn't tell. There is one district, which is one of the undertakings in the SMC. They just actually invited us. Tomorrow and up to Friday, we will actually be also going there. And what we'll actually be doing, we'll actually be mobilizing community leaders, traditional leaders, whoever, to to play a role in conversing around the sector, and to identify which are roles each stakeholder can actually play, making sure this is following the same kind of taking and that's what it's going to do. Because that's what they actually said, we need to try and keep up in terms of understanding that. And also, I agree that maybe in school it might not actually be easy. This is why we actually are now working very closely with NEC in Southgate, where we have actually now been piloting what is referred to as work-based QLCC structure, where everyone, be it the counselor, in a work-based kind of setup, or traditionalized in rural areas, as members would say, would actually take up on the ability of teaching and learning in his or her particular area. And that is beginning to also bear some kind of support. For instance, in Free State, already under the chair, in Free State, they've already set up a work-based structure. And they're beginning to work wonders from what they are saying, because that's where the communities are mobilized to accountability sessions and so forth. Even in Mpumalanga, for the matter, almost on a quarterly basis, they've got what is referred to as accountability sessions, where the call for concerns to come and account in terms of the result, in terms of the behavior of a certain school and so forth. So, it becomes a little bit difficult, because I know it's guided by the interconnecting capability and the ministry to say how best we can actually measure the CLCC moving forward. I think for the reporting capability, as the team of staff are actually seeing.
Thanks. Can I take the remainder of the questions and comments that you made? I think to piggyback on the issue of reporting and measurable targets, I think that's been responded to. But just to say that in addition, what we have taken place through HECOM and the formal structures, HECOM subcommittees monitoring and evaluation, is that in all of the quarterly reporting that provinces have to do, they've got to take it down, right down to the smallest unit of delivery, which means that at district level, they've got to give account of all of the issues of functionality and quality improvement. And before that, indicated that the district has a program to implement in our strategic plan or within the budget program for our indications that should be measured. It is how it is infused into all of the other areas of quality measurement. So, for instance, when our research monitoring evaluation team and ministers of recent creation on oversight units have to go out into schools and districts, they would need to be able to come back and ensure that those quarterly reports that we receive from provinces all reflect on all of this. And I think clearly all of our reporting centers can be focused on. We can ask specifically for the QRVP functionality to be reported. And we would certainly build that into the report. But it is captured there in terms of how we can extract the information from the report for the minute. We've done, on a regular basis, these reports to HECOM. And I'm not saying we as QRVP, because I mean the QRVP is a broad departmental undertaking. And whilst as an individual manager, I don't have a unit within my team. The unit sits within another part of the department, and we will speak in terms of the overall monitoring and oversight work, how this is, how functionality can be captured. So we've undertaken that, I think, in terms of those quarterly reports. The analysis that we've provided can in fact be shared with our future quarterly sessions with the department, with the committee as well. So that's a useful reminder. So thanks to Brenda for raising that. In terms of the hindrances, I'm not able to speak to that specifically. As I said, we'll extract that from the various quarterly reports that the unit will provide us with. There was a question around, and I think it's been attended to by most of the last speakers around the issue of how districts are allocated or unevenly allocated resources for special schools. I think we'll take that simply as a comment, because we can only
acknowledge that as a given and have this with not change at the moment. And we'll certainly, I think, become more more aware of how we report on this work because of that information. We agree that we need to strengthen the monitoring system, and I've spoken to that also in our company report that will be part of our quarterly report to this committee. I would ask the unit to develop some maybe a written response to how the evidence around whether it offers better functionality in the office of the MEC or the office of the SG based on what they will extract from their own oversight to those areas. And in fact, I think we should forward that to the committee. I'm not sure that would satisfy the committee, because I think we need to draw on actual examples and evidence of that. In terms of the advocacy campaign, the chairperson is quite correct that there is a need to elevate the reporting, maybe in really discreet and obvious sense, of the work of and the findings of the oversight team that go out. Because the work that we need to advocate, I mean, I think quite often Minister Saab says that we are silent about our successes and that we don't advocate it adequately. And so we also have our communication desk that we part of the community that should be able to add to that, to ensure that we're able to trust the tighter communication strategy to signal the successes, even on the smallest types of intervention that we have. Because I think those probably speak volumes of the work to be done. I also want to say that just maybe can you remind me if I haven't touched on everything. But I think the issue of the evidence and the take-up in various provinces, we've also seen that with the handover of political heads and the changeover of heads of department, as an example, that in some cases it's either served on the commitment to QRTC or it's made it lag, take a few steps back, because everybody gets back and on track with their own particular program of action. So we have seen that unevenness kind of gap in the change in administration. And certainly I think it remains our constant effort to ensure that there's uniformity. But it's very important test within the AECOM structures, times out in two sites. The one would be the AECOM subcommittee for monitoring and evaluation. The second one is in the district, the new district subcommittee of AECOM. And through both those platforms, there is constant vigilance and interaction with members of the QRTC team. Obviously, their business is not just a big meeting. Their business is about being in the field. And while I think they often resist, as the QRTC team, the term troubleshooting, sometimes that's exactly what they have to do, is to go out there and be the troubleshooter. And I think that ought to remain an undefined and broad mandate rather than being narrowly defined by indicators or by targets. Quite often you don't set up to have a crisis, you go out there and you address the crisis. So I think that's a critical issue is for the committee and that runs the campaign for that, for them to take stock of that, because I think it's often a difficult task for my unit that does reporting to extract from them exactly, you know, what it is that they've now been doing, because they've been so much of it and in so many different sites with very little resources. I would ask that if the VK has any other additions to that, because the company, there's a very tight relationship between the QRPT, NDT and partnerships as a unit within a particular branch of the department. But as I said, its mandate is very transversal and therefore cannot be confined to a single branch, which is why I probably use this to some of you to also make this presentation. I
would also,
I think if I have
not
any questions, please remind me
if you have done anything. Just, while you're getting in, when QLTC was managed, there was a variety of stakeholders that you made commitments, you know, maybe you can take us on board. Do you think have been head union for the list of things that they appointed to do? Are we still seeing those partners coming in to play as we are continuing with this? I was still getting the support and the commitment that when the whole campaign started, we saw that the reception, the good reception from the various stakeholders.
I think that all of those sexual partners are on board. In fact, as I said, I think it's an invitation. We've expanded a number that originally made the pledges. If you recall, there was no pledge for learners at that point. There was a pledge for teachers, for officials, and for parents. And as it has grown, obviously business, etc., have all come on board to the Red Letter Court. I think that is also a category. We should maybe familiarize everybody and issue a copy of that Red Letter Court. It remains in place. And all of the efforts of broadening the base of partnerships that the department has engaged with, it echoes the sentiments of those pledges. So in terms of a revival of interest, I think the QCC certainly serves as that coordinating committee that in a sense manages oversight over the commitment to those pledges. And joining structures such as SAFE and the ERRC, it's important because there's often the issue of what is the consequence for anybody who violates the original pledge or the code of conduct. And we have regulatory measures within our legislation and within the relationships and roles of such as SAFE. And I know the SAFE has also been here to present, districts have been here to present, CLOC has come to present, all of them are still on board. And I think equally committed to the work of the initial aims and objectives of the CLOC.
Thank you, Chair. I think we should have started off with the teacher unit and the department, but over time we've expanded I think the PCC and what it was doing also provided a model on which to assist the QRCC. I think enthusiasm, maybe at the start, is what we've lacked at, something that we need to provide. And I think the input on the honorable members is that it's clear that our implementation is uneven. And that we need to do more to ensure that what we see as a benefit from the QLPC, we do see that we hear on the ground, which is from the school upwards, in terms of implementation. So I think when we come back to the board again, we should show progress in that respect of how we've corrected that in terms of strengthening it, and maybe at that time, some of the questions asked by the honorable members whether you go forward or not, we can then make a judgment in that respect. But I think we've got other, the NECC itself, the QRPC, and these are vehicles, if used and implemented correctly, can make a big difference.
Thank you very much for that, DG. Member, what is exactly. Can I give you that sense of that small follow-up?
Me?
Yes, you may, but I'm not sure whether there is anyone. Oh, it's impossible. We cannot run that one. Please, 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 please,
Chair, my question goes to the NECC. The DG and a number of other officials referred to the NECC. If we look at the work that the NECC is doing, we will understand how they fit into the plan, etc. I raised a question for ministerial response on what work the NECC is doing. The response that I got was on the NECC. I'm going to re-raise that question because I can't look at the work the NECC is doing because the DG hasn't
Minister has given me that information. I'm asking the DG now, if I re-raise that question, will you tell me what the NECC will be doing? Thank you. Mine's
just the question
that
wasn't answered,
if that's the issue. I think on the SGP, let me see if there's a new one. Yeah, on the SGP, I think we reported that we had elections now. I can't remember the exact figure, but it was in the 90s. There were a few HCB elections that were not held and provinces were being monitored for the conclusion. So I think we'll come back and we'll send that in. But if there is a school that isn't with the HCB, we'll need to intervene to look into what are the reasons and issues that they are having in such. So yeah. I think on that we will come back with the latest. But I think we had most of the provinces have successfully completed. There were instances where elections wouldn't be held, not because of the quorum issues, there could be other issues, but they were some in the report to us. On the Honorable Lapmo, the question has been raised. I don't know where you got the I'd asked Mr. Mario what were the outstanding questions so that I could see it. And he did say something positive, which surprised me. Because we tried to say that this is an answer that needs to be given, but what gets presented in the English is not our choice.
Thank you. Yes, I did ask him why he wanted to come.
Thank you so much. Honourable members, we have come to the end of our meeting. Thank you so much, Gigi, with your team. I think you have clarified us more on the two topics, but as I said, for the two topics, the main objective is to say how do we bring in the communities into the life of our schools? How do we make sure that we elevate education to be a societal issue, to be a real societal issue. And we're confident with the initiatives and the observations that you just made, we are on the right track of doing it, because you know, without those communities, our schools will never perform the way we wish to see them performing. Thank you very much. We wish you all the best. Keep up the good work that you are doing, understanding the challenges that you are always faced with, but we know that where there is love will always be the way, because we all sit here with the love of our country, with the love of those in us, in our schools, so they make they will find way of making sure that we reach them. Thank you so much. Remember, can I adopt 1 minute before we begin? Thank you, teacher.
We only have one set of minutes dated the 28th of July.
Yes.
Okay. Can we? Can we do that? On page 1, honourable members, any corrections, let us take them. I would say to get the corrections, things that you might want to raise there. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. 7. That number 4 should be number 5, and vice versa, because I think we did exactly what we did today. We completed the proposal committee and then we adopted the minutes later after then it was in the agenda of the meeting. Honourable members, I have requested that you read the issues you correct with which
at the same time and feeling if nothing has been raised. So can you get the move on? Thank you. Thank you so much, honorable members. Next week we are doing our quarterly report next week. I just forgot him to make sure that I remind the department to give us the documents as early as this week, but I will be in contact with them now because we are doing our quarterly report. There is so much that we need to look at. We need to prepare ourselves for that. But then I'm making that commitment. I'll make sure that I call Majid now and to say, can you get the report before the end of this week so that members can get a chance to look at the report before the end of the week. Honorable Lafmoy, is here.
Yes, Chair, I just want to note, I wanted to ask last week, and I was able to read these minutes and very clearly understand what presenters are questions that aren't, were asked and answers that were given. So I just want to again pay compliments to ourselves. They really are the
exposition. Yes, thank you so much, Alistair. Keep up with the great things. Thank you again. Again, honorable members. See you next week.
You know, you haven't been to the speech of the funeral room, and you're no longer, don't you?